This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast. It is Tuesday the 20th of March. I am your temporary host of the day, Jack Pitbrook. Our true host, Ed Mallion, is away on holiday, I'm afraid. But I am joined today by two of my trustiest lieutenants. On my right, Chief Sports Writer Jonathan Liu. Say hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
And in front of me, Lawrence Lusley. Say hello, Lawrence.
Hi.
So we are right in the midst.
Wednesday the 20th, not Tuesday the 20th.
So I've messed up my intro in two ways. This is why I'm not the real host. This is why I'm only the interim stand-in host. I'm the Solskjaer to Ed's Mourinho.
Say what you like about Ed. He always gets the day right.
Mm. Yeah. Well, he doesn't even say the date. I tried to add it in. This is going to be my bit of extra... Like, what I would bring to the hosting would be saying the date, because Stephen Metcalf says it at the start of the Slate Culture Gab Fest podcast every Wednesday. But by getting the day of the week wrong, I have completely ruined my only attempt at, like, bringing any of my own personality to bear to this podcast.
That can be your thing now, just getting it wrong every time.
Yeah, getting the date wrong. Yeah. The one thing, I mean, there's only seven to choose from.
Will he get the month wrong?
And even, there's only seven to choose from, and by process of elimination, I knew it wasn't going to be, like, Saturday or Sunday, because I would never be here on a Saturday or Sunday. Yeah. And even then, I managed to get it wrong.
Normally we record on a Monday, which is, I guess, is where the confusion stemmed from.
Right, yeah, because on Monday, I don't know what I was doing on Monday, but then on Tuesday I was at St. George's Park yesterday, so it was a bit of a kind of shot in the dark. This is the problem with international football, is that international football throws you off your sense of calendar.
Disorienting.
Because we all build our, we literally build our lives around the rhythm of Premier League, Champions League, Europa League Thursdays, press conference Fridays, all the rest of it. Take that. If you remove all of that structure, then we are kind of floating in empty space, basically.
England are playing on Friday night?
Right, yeah. So England play Czech Republic at Wembley on Friday night, and then they fly to Montenegro. And that game, I believe, is on Monday evening?
Ooh, Monday evening. Yeah. Free weekend. Very weird.
Yeah, so this is how it is for an international break. And this is our first international break, obviously, since November, since when we've had some fantastic domestic football.
Some very poor domestic football.
Yeah, a lot of that too. We've had the best time to race that we've had for 5 years.
At least.
If not more. Mm. Unfortunately, we don't have our title race expert, Miguel, here to talk about it with us and put it into full context. But
The thing is, this is a genuinely significant moment in the title race.
I think
very
we
good.
Should... Yeah.
Good. Very good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. It's actually better than Ed's normal Miguel impression.
Yeah, which is, it's a little bit sort of, you know, Frank Carson, isn't it?
I was going to say, it's a little bit there's more to Ireland than this. But given how good the domestic football is at the moment, and given that the England games coming up are, like, not massive games, they're not Croatia and Spain in the Nations League, they are the kind of England games that people generally don't get that excited about, do we care about this international break or not?
I mean, the short answer is probably no. There's very little jeopardy in here. One of the good things about the Nations League, for its really quite Byzantine structure, was it did provide big tests every single game and proper sort of promotion relegation. This is what's on the line now. England are in a 5-team group with the Czech Republic, Montenegro, Bulgaria, and Kosovo. I think the top two of five qualify. Even then, if England don't make it in the top two, they're guaranteed a playoff because of how they did in the Nations League. So I don't think anybody seriously expects England to mess this qualification up. But, you know, there's still plenty to talk about.
It feels like the Nations League has already come in and overtaken the qualifiers as a form of entertainment, which I don't think we necessarily would have expected. I think we would have kind of said the Nations League, oh, it fills in for the friendlies. But actually, it's jumped up above the friendlies and above the qualifiers and been the most entertaining form of non-championship football in international football. So, yeah, it still feels quite underwhelming that we are playing these kind of games. I mean, Kosovo, for example, as interesting as it will be politically, is quite an underwhelming challenge.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that there is, but what I do think is that while there's no real interest in the matches themselves coming up this weekend, although I'm sure Wembley will be sold out on Friday night because the FA do a good job of selling tickets for these games now, is that like the bigger question of the direction and prospects of the England team is now more of a national interest than I think it's been for about 12 or 13 years. And this means that like because people really care about, are we going to win the Nations League in June? Are we going to win the Euros in 2020? That means that like games which are not normally interesting are interesting because people want to watch the team play.
Yeah.
And they want to see who, you know, with no, there are some interesting on the pitch issues. There's the introduction of Declan Rice, who has never played for England before because, you know, we all know why. But I think will probably be a starter for England for a long time to come. There's the centre back issue where both England's two best centre backs, Gomez and Stones, are both out, so they're left with Maguire, Keane, and Tarkowski, which I think is nobody's idea of like a first choice set of options. There's the right back issue where England have about four or five players of fairly similar level, and Southgate doesn't really know who his best one is. And I think these are all questions that are more interesting than they would have been if England were rubbish or if people didn't care.
Yeah, and the fact that the Nations League finals are just a few months away kind of almost gives these qualifiers the feel of a final audition for June, especially given that England now play two qualifiers and I think don't play more qualifiers until September. There's very clearly a climax to the season in June, and these two games feel like almost a sort of a feeling out exercise for guys like Declan Rice and Ward Prowse, I guess.
I think there's an interesting, you talk about the kind of audition ahead of the Nations League. I think we're playing Holland, aren't we, in the semi-finals?
Yeah.
And I think there's an interesting kind of subplot here with Southgate and his selection and how the balance between his loyalty with the players who obviously were successful in Russia and now the kind of new players coming through. So James Maddison, Aaron Wan-Bissaka have both been excluded from the squad. Kieran Trippier keeps his place in the squad, even though on form you'd say he doesn't probably merit it. So there's an interesting issue for Southgate now, which has cropped up in this international break, which perhaps we haven't really had to consider before because he hasn't had that test of loyalty versus form. So I think that will be a kind of interesting subplot as we go through the next couple of games.
Yeah, the midfield is, I think, a genuine area of concern, especially with Lingard out, Dele Alli out.
Dele Alli is back in this squad.
Right.
Although he has obviously been out for the last month or so.
Yeah. You know, he's clearly not 100% match fit yet. And so this idea of where the creativity is going to come from in midfield, which is almost the main question mark over this Southgate side, that I think is going to come to the fore this week.
Yeah, I think midfield is really the last unsolved question of the Southgate era right now. You know, he's clearly settled back on the 4-3-3 this year since the World Cup, having obviously played at the World Cup with the back three. We know more or less who we certainly know who the front line is and the keeper and most of the defence, but in midfield he's kind of all over the place. Like at the World Cup, it was Henderson, Lingard, and Alli.
Mm-hmm.
But then I remember the famous game in Seville, which was probably the best England performance under Southgate. The 3-2. It was Barkley, Winks, and Dyer. So a completely different three. And then when we beat Croatia, the game that got us through to the finals, Delph was brought in quite surprisingly. So he's used a lot of different people, and I don't really think he knows what the best combination is. I think it has to involve Declan Rice. I mean, we can come on to this later, or we can do it now. But
why?
Because I think Rice is the best holding midfielder that England have. I think he's better than Dyer.
Better than Henderson?
I think so.
I feel like his passing range is something at the base of midfield that an England team has never had, actually. And he could actually bring a new dynamic in this new era, this kind of new era going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to confess, I haven't seen a huge amount of Declan Rice this season. And I think you surely would want to see more than like a half a season of him before you kind of committed him to being an England starter for the next few years. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he does.
It will be really interesting. I think, sorry, I was speaking recently to someone who's been a big part of Rice's career back when he was at West Ham. He was saying the thing that always impressed him about Rice was the ability to only take one or two touches in the midfield. Like, he doesn't hold on to the ball for any longer than he needs to. He always moves it on forward quickly. And even Harry Kane at his press conference yesterday was saying that what impressed him about Rice is he's not a midfielder who would, is like always passing it backwards or sideways for the sake of his passing completion statistics. He's willing to try the dangerous pass forward through the lines to find someone, cutting the opposition open, even though there's a risk of losing the ball. Now, obviously Kane didn't say that as a like implied criticism of Eric Dier, but that is basically the difference between Dier and Rice.
Yeah,
like Dier does not pass. There are some things that Dier is good at, but what he doesn't pass, he doesn't play good forward passes. He doesn't move the ball forward quickly.
No, Dier strikes me as instinctively a risk-averse player.
Completely, yeah, completely.
He's, in many ways, he's a defender who's been converted to midfield, even though obviously he played a lot of midfield in his youth as well. But it strikes me that's his mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
And against, the packed defences that England are going to come up against later on in this qualifying campaign, you do need to move it quite quickly and you do need to move it quite precisely.
Yeah, and if there's one criticism of England's play at the World Cup, for example, it's that they didn't really move the ball quickly enough in midfield. That they had a midfield that was like so much based on energy and running and legs. Sorry, that's a triple tautology. with Henderson, Lingard, and Ali.
He's fast, he's quick, and he's got pace.
with Henderson, Lingard, and Ali, it meant that, like, against Croatia, for example, in the semi-final, they couldn't keep the ball, the players got tired, and when they got tired, they had nothing left. And I kind of get the impression that Southgate wants to go in a more, like, technical, controlling direction. And that's why I think Winks is so important. Winks obviously was fantastic in that 3-2 win in Spain. He's not in this England squad. Like, Southgate loves him, he's not in this England squad because he got, I think, a groin injury the other week, which just kept him out for the last bit, having played an awful lot for Spurs this season. But I kind of think going forward, the best balance in midfield would be probably Rice at the base, probably Winks ahead of Barkley, and then one person who can, bomb on and get in the opposition box, whether
Lingard.
That is Lingard or Ali.
Or Barkley, I guess.
Or Barkley, yeah.
That's where you thought James Maddison might have a chance. As such a creative, I mean, you wrote this, Jack, didn't you, this week, that his creativity statistics, they outstrip anyone in Europe, is that right?
Yeah, Maddison, as of like last weekend, so which I was saying that must still be the case, Maddison has created more chances than anyone else in Europe's top five leagues this season, something like 81. That's ahead of Hazard, ahead of Messi, who are like third and fourth. So Maddison is tied at the top.
I believe you're legally and journalistically bound to accompany this with the word Lionel Who.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, obliged to say thanks to our friends at Opta.
Oh, right. No.
Lionel Who?
Yeah. Lionel Who? James Maddison? Yeah.
That would have been a good headline for the piece.
Where does Maddison fit in?
Well, this
in
is the problem.
He's a 10, isn't he?
Yeah, so for Leicester, he's been playing as a 10 in a 4-2-3-1. And at the squad announcement press conference at St George's Park last week, I asked Southgate about this. And I said, why isn't he in the squad? And Southgate said, well, because we see him as a 10. And given that England don't play as a 10, or sorry, don't play with a 10, that means there's not really so much of a role. And the fact they have Ali means that if they were to switch to a 10, Maddison wouldn't necessarily be the first choice. I'm not sure. I think I wonder if there might be another reason. Like, for example, I think Maddison could play in one of those attacking roles in the middle. Like the number eight positions that England play with, I don't think he could only play in a 10.
Right, but I mean, if you're going to play in those positions, you need like incredible coverage of the field.
Yeah.
And you also need to be able to win the ball back. And, whether he's the best player for that is kind of debatable. But also, I also think that if England were to play, say, 4-4-1-1 against maybe like one of the bigger, he could play behind Kane.
Yeah, he could well do. Although I think
that would be Sterling, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think he Sterling was another name he mentioned as a potential number 10 in that if they were to change this in that way. So it does look like at the moment he's not really got a way in, but he is obviously still very young. There is interest in him from some of the big Premier League boys. I think he'll probably stay at Leicester for next season, but I'm sure he will continue to be part of Southgate's thoughts, not least because he's also in a very strong under-21 team. For their friendlies, I think, against Germany and Poland this week ahead. And if he goes to the under-21 championships in Italy next June and does well, then, you know, that will itself generate momentum for him being part of this squad for next season and the Euros next year.
And Southgate really values that, doesn't he? They're kind of soaking up the DNA of the England youth setup and all of that.
Yeah, so he's been, that's a really good point. Southgate's been incredibly loyal to lots of players who he picked at the under-21s or who've been part of the youth team setup over the years. Mm. You know, whether it's Lingard, Loftus-Cheek, bringing in Hudson-Odoi, obviously for this squad, quite surprisingly. Sancho.
He loves Chalobah. He absolutely loves Chalobah.
He loves Chalobah.
And just tried to keep picking him. But
yeah, he gave Chalobah his England debut, even though Chalobah has barely played for Watford in his 2 years there, because he obviously got that. He fractured his kneecap after a few weeks into his first season there, missed a year, came back. Javi Gracia didn't really like him. And despite that, Southgate still gave him his debut in that Spain game.
Yeah.
So yeah, like that's loyalty to players who have traditionally been part of the England system is a big part of how Southgate does. How are we feeling about the bigger question, which is England's prospects for Euro 2020?
They should be one of the favourites. And I think they'll go into it with the mentality of one of the favourites, because I don't see an outstanding side in Europe, not even that France team. I don't see a side on the level of Spain 2010, 2012. I don't see anybody out there that I think England would not go into a game with confidence. That's not a sentence, is it? But I think it's incredibly open tournament, and England, why not?
Yeah, I think the England are among that cluster of what, six teams maybe you'd say, who are the sort of level above that. Just that rung below.
Have you seen anything, or in what we've seen since the World Cup, which was, feels like literally years ago, but it was what, 10 months ago, 9 months ago?
Yeah.
Do you feel like there is continued progress in the right direction, that England are probably going to be a better team than they were in Russia?
I think so. I think it'll be interesting to see how he progresses with the back four, which is obviously the most significant tactical change from where he was in Russia. And that, I suppose the best evidence for that was the win over Spain. So I think we've seen a little bit of progress, and I think there's just a really nice core of English youth coming through. Jadon Sancho obviously is the kind of most exciting one, but Declan Rice, as we've mentioned, Maddison, who's not even making the squad, there's a really nice core there. So I think there is progress.
What's encouraged me is that Southgate has clearly concluded after the World Cup that the 2018 formula is not going to work in 2020, that evolution was needed, like you were saying.
Yeah.
They do need to control games a little bit better, and that's a mental thing as much as a technical thing. But the evolution of this team, even in the space of less than a year, gives me a little bit of encouragement that they are going, that they'll go into the tournament still at the cutting edge, as it were.
Yeah, I think
I was going to say, I just really, on kind of on the same note, I really like the way that they approach the World Cup. And kind of analysed the squad and said, right, with a year or so before it, and said, right, wing backs are the way to go. That plays to our strengths. That plays to Trippier and Rose, etc. And I think him and Southgate and Steve Holland have a really good way of analysing the strengths of the squad, not necessarily just picking the 11 best players, which I think England have been guilty of doing before, but actually building a style and a setup. And that stands us in good stead, I think.
Yeah, I really admire it. I really admire the maturity of thinking in not being tempted to say, we've nailed it, haven't we? Yeah. Back three.
Yeah.
Got us to semi-finals of the World Cup. We can't possibly do anything different from that.
Yeah.
And recognising that, in fact, that was you know, the right way to approach that particular tournament, but there might, in fact, be a better way to approach the next few games. And I keep going on about it, but it was such an important moment. The 3-2 win in Spain last October, which was, I think, the best England performance of the last 20 years, that wouldn't have been possible playing a back three, because it was all based on having Kane and Sterling and Rashford up front in that 4-3-3. And obviously, if you're playing 3-5-2, you can't play Sterling and Rashford and Kane. You can only play two of them. So that was a complete vindication of that approach. And I know they scraped past Croatia. And I know if they hadn't beaten Croatia, then not only would England not be in the Nations League semis and final this June, but they would in fact have been relegated down to UEFA Nations League League B for the next cycle. So it's not like it was inevitable. But there is evidence from what we've seen in the Nations League campaign that England's new 4-3-3 works and that it's the right approach.
Yeah, I think you had to. I mean, if any sort of audit of this squad would tell you that the best part of that squad is the front three.
Totally, yeah.
You have to build that squad to get the best out of Kane, Rashford, Sterling, and Sancho as well now. And you can't do that unless you're if you're playing wing backs, or you can't do that unless you have some semblance of control over midfield as well. That's what gives me a bit of encouragement.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Who would you play at right back?
Alexander-Arnold,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Trippier has had a poor season with Spurs by the standards of his last two.
Which he admitted. Sorry, yeah. At St. George's Park yesterday, he was very honest about how his own failings this year.
Yeah. Walker, I think... I mean, what do you think about Walker?
I think he's been consistently good for City in the year and a half, almost 2 years since he's been there. I think that he won't be as good as he currently is indefinitely, because he's a player who relies on pace, and players who rely on pace have a shelf life.
I think Walker's game, and this goes all the way back to Tottenham, is that he has been a defender who gets himself out of trouble and trusts himself to get out of trouble. Alexander-Arnold, I feel, is the sort of player who tries not to get in trouble in the first place, and he just seems like a more... I'm trying not to use the word intelligent. I'm trying to use a slightly more intelligent word, more intelligent. But I think he reads the game a lot better.
Yeah.
And he knows, when to go forward. He knows when to cover. He's got, I think, a better spatial awareness, and you don't tend to see him throwing himself into desperate tackles that occasionally you see Walker trying and pulling off, or occasionally not.
Yeah, I feel like Walker was the archetypal kind of fullback that stepped on from the kind of Gary Neville fullback of bursting down the wing. But I think also Trent Alexander-Arnold is also perhaps the prototype of what the next fullback will be, which is someone who can almost play in central midfield. He can, he can attack and create, and he can have. It's going to be a much more influential position. It feels every season it's more and more.
He's our Lahm, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's exactly the closest thing we have to a Philip Lahm.
Yeah,
and his set piece delivery has he now takes corners for Liverpool, has come on leaps and bounds in the last sort of year, 18 months. The improvement has been really quite encouraging.
It's a good point as well, actually. I think that set pieces is something we've massively underrated over the years in England. You know, since David Beckham, we just didn't really fill that void very well. And Gerrard and Rooney and then Harry Kane. And Trent Alexander-Arnold is someone with a really high quality delivery.
Yeah, I think I'm probably persuaded to the case for Alexander-Arnold by you guys. I know that in the last year or so, Southgate's had this big decision to make between Trippier and Walker, and he's been rotating between the two. But I think he's got to start thinking who's going to be the best at who's going to be best at Euro 2020. Mm. I mean, at Euro 2020, Kyle Walker will be 30 years old. This is Walker's, I think, eighth full season in Premier League football. Like I just said, players like that can't play forever.
Yeah.
Because human bodies are not that quick forever, particularly when you're playing 50, 60 games a season every season.
Yeah.
Do you see Trent, slight side point here, but do you see Trent Alexander-Arnold developing into a midfielder rather than in the long term?
I don't know. I'd probably say, like, off the top of my head, no. But that said, I don't watch a lot of Liverpool or know a lot about football. So I don't know. I mean, instinctively, I'd say he looks a bit tall for a midfielder, but that's the sort of thing my dad would say. I don't know. Like, do you, Do you think he can play midfield? I think when you've got a player who's that quick and whose delivery is that good from out wide, you're best off keeping him there.
Why is it better to play in midfield than at fullback? Maybe in times gone by it would be a more important position, but I mean at Fulham on Sunday, I think he touched the ball more than anybody else on the pitch. Him and Robertson touched the ball more than anyone on the pitch.
Yeah, I was sat next. Johnny and I were sat together for that game, and it was so striking how again, as someone who doesn't watch Liverpool every week, how Robertson and Alexander Arnold spent the whole game in Fulham's half.
Yeah,
really provided all the width, like you know the kind of old saying, "Oh, you both fullbacks can't go ahead at the same time." Not true.
Well, if that's Fulham, you absolutely can.
Yeah. When the other team had Ryan Babel on one wing and Floyd Aiti on the other.
Yeah.
They spent the whole game in the other half. They're so good. They're so dangerous. They find each other with these crossfield passes. And I just thought, I know what Walker does for City is very good, but I think the kind of up, what Ed would call the upside. To Alexander Arnold is probably higher, particularly on the kind of like medium term view which England should now be taking.
We also haven't mentioned defending, and I think like one on one defending, Trent Alexander Arnold has shown himself to be really competent at against great Champions League wingers as well. So I think he's kind of the whole package.
Yeah, I mean there was that game like really early in his career where he got totally embarrassed by Rashford, or Martial against United, that was, you know, he's pinpointed that as kind of a real learning moment for him, and again it's as much about mentality as anything else, but he's really grown into that role.
So if we were to scope out the England team for Euro 2020, then
who plays centre half?
Pickford, agreed. Alexander Arnold. Yeah. Then I think the answer is obvious. I think it has to be Stones and Gomez.
Yeah,
Gomez
is so good.
I love Gomez. And
they fit with the kind of style of play and everything. Yeah, I think that works.
Then at left back,
tough on Slaphead.
Yeah, I mean, Maguire is just nowhere near as good as Stones and Gomez.
He's good.
He's fine. He's closer to Michael Keane than he is to Stones and Gomez.
That's a tough rap on. That's a tough rap on both of them. But no, I don't. I agree. I agree.
Left back Chilwell.
Yeah, I like Chilwell.
Yeah. I suppose. What's your other option? Luke Shaw, I suppose.
And Danny Rose.
Yeah. Rose has done pretty well at Spurs this year, but I think Shaw has probably improved more.
Shaw at his best might have a claim.
Yeah.
But I think Chilwell at his full potential is an England left back. He's an international class left back. He hasn't quite his delivery for Leicester this season hasn't been as good as it was, certainly last season. But there's an end product issue there, but his positioning and his coverage and his movement has improved no end.
I feel like all great teams have a mid-table left back anyway. Like Joan Capdevila and that great Spain team. I think it's,
Chilwell may not be a mid-table player for much longer, given that City are interested in him this year. Pep obviously wants a bit of competition for Pep's basically gone off Mendy and Delph, who are the two left backs the last year or two. And Zinchenko, who's done well, is probably not the long-term option. So but then I'm sure Chilwell will be incredibly expensive if City wants to sign him, because he's an England international player, an established Premier League team.
That's not
City have money, I believe. I read they've got money.
Well, yeah, but they might FFP. I mean, who knows what's going to happen there? Midfield, who do you have?
So if we're having a 4-3-3, I think you have to have. I think you're right. I think. Probably Rice if he continues on this trajectory. I think, like Johnny says, it's perhaps early to just shoo him straight in as a starter, but if we're thinking he's going to carry on this trajectory towards Euro 2020, then I would say Rice at the base. And then you've got this is, like you said, is the hardest part. Harry Winks. Do we think, if he's playing,
I've
regularly
got him in mind,
Tottenham?
Yeah.
Oh gosh,
you just need someone who can pass the ball.
Winks,
as well as Rice.
He's all right at passing the ball. I don't see Winks as like a defence-splitting passing midfielder. He's good at recycling.
He's really good at short passes and keeping things moving.
Yeah.
A continuity guy.
Exactly, yeah, a continuity man.
He has that little burst of acceleration that Wilshere had when he first burst onto the scene, which I do think is helpful. Like, England players don't often do that little dribble between two central midfielders. So I do think he's got something different.
I think if he's fit, Dele Alli.
Yeah,
like the improvement that he's shown, the defensive side of his game this season has been quite striking.
Yeah,
he did an absolute job on Jorginho in the league game against, I don't think it was a league game at Wembley against Chelsea. And then afterwards talked about how he, you know, Pochettino has really improved that side of his game.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a great performance.
Yeah, he can hunt now. He's your
so
hatchet.
Have you got Ali and who else?
Lingard, I think.
Ali and Lingard.
I think I
2018 all over again.
I know. It's nostalgia, if nothing else.
But so yeah, I my problem with that is, I suppose you're just, like, we felt like in 2018 we were slightly shoehorning two very attacking players into number eight positions, and I feel like if you do that again but with a back four rather than a back five, it's quite offensive. But
I'd want to see more from Rice. I wouldn't rule out Henderson and Rice. Henderson and Rice and Winks. Henderson and Winks, I think two of those three, or Lingard, or Ward-Prowse.
And then there's no debates about the front line. Rashford, Kane and Sterling.
Just gotta be there, unless Sancho begins to threaten that.
Maybe. Although I think Sancho would always be fantastic as an option off the bench.
Yeah, but like, you know, at what stage do you say he's like one of the best wingers in, like the best wingers in Europe? You've got to play him.
There's also an argument to say that Rashford is better perhaps as a deputy for Kane than actually pushing him out wide and perhaps slightly nullifying some of his strengths. I don't know.
Yeah. Tough on Callum Wilson.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Hard lines.
It's an interesting topic with Kane, which is, because Kane's going to be 26 at the time of the Euro 2020.
He's 25 until he's 26.
Will that be peak Kane? Will that be the best of Kane? Have we seen the best of Kane? That's a theory that you hear in some circles.
Yeah, I think Kane will.
Do you think we've seen the best of Kane?
I think there's enough to his game that he'll be able to evolve into a slightly different. I think Kane might not be a top class number nine for more than another year or two. You can see him developing the creative side of his game. It's possible that in the future you see him in a slightly more withdrawn role.
That's interesting. Yeah, I think I was almost going to say the opposite, that he could do what Ronaldo's done, where he becomes just an absolute poaching box machine, which requires a lot less energy, and he does seem leggy in some games, particularly obviously at the World Cup.
I think Kane sees his own evolution along Johnny's lines, as in becoming more of a number 10. He's done it a fair bit for England in the last year, a little bit for Tottenham, you know, dropping deep, getting more of the ball, shooting from distance, or playing in Rashford and Sterling or Sancho perhaps running in front of him. That was a secret to a lot of England's play over the last 12 months or so. And I think, you know, that's the number of shirt he wears, which is not to be discounted. I think he sees that as the direction he wants to go in. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, particularly if England have players who can run in behind him, that is where he ends up.
But he's dovetailing with Ali. You can imagine how that...
Completely, could.
Or Sterling in the future. He's not quick, and he never has been quick, and that's kind of helped him in a way. That could help him. He doesn't have that yard of pace to lose. He's developed the other facets of his game to the extent that... you know, that he's never needed to be. The thing is, I think we do, it's possible to underestimate how much you need to be in peak physical condition to play that really physical number nine role, holding off people. Like, just sometimes, you know, Giroud plays it so well, and he's so agile, Giroud.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like getting a little toe in, flicking it around the corner. It's a really physically demanding role, and it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, in the next couple of years he sort of graduates to a slightly less concussive kind of role on the pitch.
Would you picture that with a almost number nine replacing him, or do you think he will
possibly as a false nine, I guess?
Yeah
You know, with two wingers, with two quick wingers like running on,
which you could definitely imagine. You thinking, with Sterling and Rashford?
Yeah, in terms of, this might sound ridiculous to listeners, but the two like classical exponents that roll in my head are Sheringham and Bergkamp. Is that the kind of thing you're thinking?
I'm thinking kind of Messi, but not obviously like completely different sorts of players.
Okay.
But drawing defenders out of position, like where do you mark him?
Yeah. Okay.
Sheringham and Bergkamp did play as much facing goal as they did with their back to goal.
But I think that's what I think Kane likes, playing in that kind of facing goal a long way out.
Yeah.
kind of thing. I think that I wonder if that might be the model.
Yeah.
We were going to talk about England's rivals at Euro 2020, but I think we've probably done enough of that now. So, unless there's anything you want to say about Germany.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, basically,
they've
binned off
Hummels,
Boateng, and Müller.
And Thomas Müller.
So that's
permanently.
Yeah.
Not according to Thomas Müller. Who?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he had an Instagram or whatever statement saying that it wasn't over, not over until it's over. So he still thinks he's got a future. Maybe he does.
How has Jogi Löw survived that? How has Jogi Löw survived 2018? How, like, if Brittany survived 2007, how has Jogi Löw survived 2018?
Well, he clearly sold the DFB on this idea. Well, yeah, no, I accept there has to be generational change, but you can't do it by changing me. You've got to let me throw the players under the bus instead. That's the solution. Why would they buy that? Why, like, you've got such an obvious and easy lever to pull, which is get rid of the guy and get someone else in. And then if the new, like, generic standard issue 34-year-old German coach wants to replace these players, he can. But it seems to be like you're just failing to take the most obvious solution offered to you by not getting rid of the manager himself.
It's ridiculous when you see the level of coaches that are out there.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's amazing. And it's obviously like a super attractive job because, you know, like Nagelsmann's going to Leipzig next year, who are not, who are obviously second by miles.
Yeah.
Tuchel's had to leave Germany to work. Like, it's not... it's not being a young German coach isn't a great gig because there's only one job worth having in Germany, which none of them have.
Well, apart from Kovac.
Well, no, but in terms of like winning stuff.
Oh yeah, I guess.
And so I think I don't know. I mean, look, again, I'm not an expert. It's kind of baffling to me that he's still in the job. He's been there forever.
When Scotland had, in the sort of, late 80s and through the 90s, Scotland had loads of amazing coaches and kept appointing like absolute numpties to coach the national team.
It seems so drastic as well. I think it's Boateng or Hummels, one of them is 29, which seems really young for a defender.
I think Boateng's like a 88 birthday, so he will now be 30.
I mean, he does, to be fair, Boateng does look a little bit effed.
Yeah, I mean, in my humble opinion, Hummels has always been a slow fraud. I don't mind them binning off him.
This is the thing. These are guys who were really amazing at 24, 25, and that's almost like the center of gravity of a footballing career has shifted forward so much.
That is exactly what I was thinking of when I was. That's a really, really important point. Like, this is going to sound insane. Even though Germany won the World Cup in 2014, all with these guys, the whole kind of 88, 89 generation, arguably the best football they played was actually in 2010 when they lost the semi-final to Spain 1-0.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that this is...
Nobody expected the Spanish Inquisition in the air.
for me, the best football that generation played was when they won the 2009 Under-21 Championship and then reached the semi-final in 2010. And even though they happened to win the World Cup in 2014, I didn't think they were that good at that World Cup. And to me, that suggests, like you were saying, the best football that generation played together was in their early 20s. And certainly after their winning the World Cup in 2014, when they were all, as you say, like 25, they achieved nothing after that. And that links us back to the England issue. Like, I know this is still a young England team and they will continue to be young at 2020 and even at 2022. But the example of Germany is that you've got to get your winning done. Sometimes a generation has to do its winning early because there's no guarantee you will continue to improve and improve after early promise.
It's a more physically demanding game than I think it's ever been. I don't think there's too much debate about that. And the amount of football that is now played, the likes of Harry Kane, Henderson, Dele Alli have been playing 50, 60 games a season since they were 17. They're now well into the hundreds, three or 400 in terms of games played. And I think, I mean, if you take Lukaku for an example, right? He's played something like 500 games, over 400 games at the age of 24, 25. He can't have more than a few years left in him.
Yeah, there are so many players, particularly players born in the sort of mid-80s who are now in their early 30s, there are so many of those guys are rubbish now because they played their best football between the ages of like 18 and 23.
Yeah, we saw Ryan Barbel on Fulham on Sunday.
How old is Ryan Barbel?
What? How old do you think Ryan Barbel is?
I think he's
in your head. He's I'm going to say into his 30s.
2007 under 21 championships. On 21 Euros.
Well, it's not fun if you work it out.
So he's probably like an 86 birthday. So I'd say he's probably 33.
He's 19th of December 1986. So he's 32.
Yeah.
So he's 32 until he's 33.
But I mean, that whole, again, that was a generation that achieved nothing. Maceo Richters, Royston Drenthe, Ron Vlaar.
Royston Drenthe, yeah.
I can't even remember who else was in that Dutch team. But they went on to do nothing really at all in serious football.
When they achieve nothing, you're able to sweep them out really quickly. I think that one of the classic problems that Germany suffered, which is what a lot of successful international teams have suffered, is once you win a World Cup, then it's like, oh, this guy's won a World Cup and he's got 100 caps and he's 28, so he's definitely in the team. And that Germany have just kept going with that same pool of players.
2014 would have been the perfect time to get rid of all the frauds. Özil Hummels.
Yeah,
but it's so difficult to do that, isn't it? To turn around and say, right, you've won the World Cup, you're out now. But yeah, you're right.
So we've been droning on forever. There's one other thing I wanted to do very quickly. Listeners, if you're listening to this, then you probably follow Jonathan on Twitter. And if you follow Jonathan on Twitter, you will have seen his famous England squad decided by their leave or remain status.
Yeah, this is not an appeal to follow me, by the way. Don't follow me. I don't want to deal with a hassle. Too much hassle.
I know this is a question you've got a lot. Is it a real list?
No, it is not a real list, Jack. It is not a real list of how everybody voted in the 2016 referendum. It is not a record that secret.
Do you want to read it out or should I read it out and then you explain?
No, you read it out. Okay. You both seem to have it up on your phones at the moment.
I certainly do. Listeners, follow along at home. Pickford, leave.
I mean, that seems fairly obvious.
Yeah. Butland remain.
Yeah, I think he's. I'm trying not to sort of load either side because we are obviously impartial on this podcast. The Indie Football Podcast is neither leave nor remain.
Although the Independent is, I believe, the official media partner of the People's Vote.
Yeah, I'm very much against the People's Vote. We had this discussion, right?
Really?
Yeah, it would be disastrous. Yeah. Absolutely disastrous. Also, Leave would win again. That would be a bad thing.
On this podcast, we support unilateral revocation of Article 50.
I do support. Yeah,
that is the true Remainers option.
Yeah, this is my this is my position.
The purists,
like, just no second referendum. Just revoke the thing and tell the will of the people to go fuck themselves.
Which, if any of these England players were for unilaterally revoking Article 50, who would it be?
Trent.
Trent, yeah. No. So let's quickly run through it. Heaton, leave.
Yeah, I hemmed and hawed over that one a little bit as well, because he's quite an intelligent guy.
Yeah, I can see that. Walker, leave. Yeah, he's a very enthusiastic guy. I can see that.
Yeah.
Rose, undecided. Maguire, leave.
Sorry, why was Rose undecided?
Because, I mean, I think I originally had him down as remain, but after a chat with Jack, Jack said it's actually a little bit more complicated than that.
Did he head into the voting booth and just tick whatever he fancied, or did he just abstain?
I think he might have spoiled his ballot paper in a fit of pique. It's too binary. It's too binary a choice, man. Can't.
What about the backstop? He knew. He knew.
We've got Maguire, leave. Yeah, I can see that. Trippier, leave, I think, is unarguable. Trent Alexander-Arnold, remain. And if not remain, then return.
I think
third referendum.
All the Liverpool. There was a little bit of debate over Henderson. I think Klopp is obviously very fiercely remain, and
hashtag FBPE.
Yeah, he follows back. Will have essentially commanded his entire squad into alignment, I feel. Whatever their pre-existing views, so all Liverpool players will vote remain.
Yeah, I can see that. Chilwell, leave. Keane, remain, but get on with it. I can see Keane being like a proper foot soldier for Remain.
Also, I think he has Irish ancestry.
Yeah, so he played for the Republic of Ireland as like schoolboys. I'm not sure up to what level. I think maybe under 18s or 19s before switching to England. I remember speaking to him before. He's a really, really, I really like him as a person. He's a really smart guy. Tarkovsky, Romain. I played a part, I think, in persuading you around to that.
Yeah, I think he was originally leave, actually. I mean, partly it's the Burnley thing. Partly it's the fact that he kind of didn't sort of renounce his Polish ancestry, but said, like, I feel totally English. I don't feel, you know. But, again, it's not an exact science.
Henderson, Romain, I think it's kind of a borderline case.
No, I think Henderson's pretty solidly Romain. You can't quantify these things, but you just get a sense of a person.
Dyer, Romain, we've all seen that famous... The
tweet, only one we're sure about.
And the Instagram post. Yeah, he's the inspiration for the whole list.
Well, he wants people's vote, doesn't he? He's not just...
He wants a people's vote.
He put it on his Twitter and his Instagram.
Did he?
His support for people's
vote. Oh, I didn't see it.
He was on his Instagram story. He just wrote hashtag people's vote. And that's something we can all get behind. Delhi, Romain.
Yeah.
Londoner.
For Barkley, you've got Romain, but back to the deal.
Barkley, I think, I can see Ross Barkley as a sort of guy who...
Like a Labour leaver, like Caroline Flint.
No, no, not a leaver. He voted Romain because he thought it was genuinely, you know, the best thing for the country to stay in the EU. But he believes, Ross Barkley is nothing if not a Democrat. He believes the democratic will of the people should be respected.
That's like the Labour MPs who might have voted Remain themselves, but are now in constituencies full of leavers.
Like Flint.
Like Caroline Flint, like Ruth Smith, and who therefore cannot come out against or can't come out and support the second referendum.
That's total bollocks, by the way. Because even in Leave constituencies, Labour voters tend very, very heavily towards Remain. Even in Leave constituencies, it's bollocks.
Yeah, that is true. But they might be thinking not so much about deselection as about the next general election.
Yeah, but like they're still not going. You know, they still need Remain. The voters are still Remainers, even if they're in a Leave constituency. Idiots.
Ward-Prowse Leave.
Yeah. Well, big debate over this.
Controversial.
Father was a barrister, and so you think, you know, legal establishment, you know, enemies of the people.
Did he go to private school?
No, he went to a Catholic college.
Yeah. Michael Keane went to private school, didn't he?
I think he went to St Bede's in Manchester.
Yeah. But what swung it for me is the fact that he's from Portsmouth / sort of, you know, rural Hampshire, and put a picture on Instagram of him fishing. And fishing, I think, is a big red flag. Not a red flag, not a bad red flag. Like red is not a threatening a flag.
With a smiley face on.
Along with golf, actually. Golf and fishing, I think, are two big predictors.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. Rice Leave. I don't know Rice at all.
I don't know him as a guy. I just you know, he gives off a slightly, you know, he left Ireland, didn't he? But also he's from East London, Essex.
Yeah, he's from Fulham.
Is he?
Yeah.
But he was.
He was at the Chelsea Academy. He's a Chelsea fan from West London. Was at the Chelsea Academy before.
A Chelsea fan, eh?
Yeah, and went to West Ham.
Interesting.
Sterling, Romain. Yeah, I think we can.
Yeah,
that clicks. Yeah. Kane, it is what it is. He kept his opinion to himself when he asked in the broadcast section, the press conference at St George's Park about this yesterday.
Yeah, I think Natalie Perks from ITV was it. Yeah, asked him, and he saw it coming a mile off. Not the first time he's been asked, I think, as well.
And then we end with a quartet of remains: Rashford, Sancho, Wilson, Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, any real debate there?
Wilson for me. I think he.
Wilson has done a lot of work. He's done a lot of work with Kick It Out, and I think would feel uncomfortable aligning himself with the many Brexit racists out there.
Okay. I've done a quick tot up, and I think it's roughly 52-48 Remain.
I think it's something like 14 or 15, 7 Remain, which I think is how the young generally trend.
And
anyway.
People, we always say that we want a representative England team, and we've got it.
Yeah, I think so.
If you're still listening to this podcast 48 minutes in, we love you. We are very grateful to you. Thank you so much. And we will be back in some form at some point next week, but I don't know exactly when and I don't know with who. Have a great week. Thanks a lot for listening. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.